everybody. I'm Andy Weinberg, and welcome to episode 40.
40.
40, the big 4-0 of the David Wasikanen In the Pocket podcast. We are so thrilled to be back after a few week summer break here live on PhillyRockRadio.com.
Together.
And, yes, Dave and I back in the studio together on Philly Rock Radio. And, of course, we're available any time of day on WildfireRadio.com. Mm. And, Dave, for me, the only thing better than talking to one legendary Philly drummer is talking to two legendary Philly drummers. Because we have on the line with us from Germany, from his new home in Germany, the great Johnny D.
Yeah. Hey, Johnny.
Yo, hey, what's up, guys?
Oh, man, it's listen, man, we talked about this a while ago, you know, like having you on the podcast, and this week, you know, Johnny and I were chatting a little bit, and I just mentioned, you know, it would be great if you came on a podcast, and all he had to do is said, yeah, it'd be cool. I said, you want to do it this week? I got him.
You're like, what, tomorrow?
Yeah,
we don't give our guests a lot of lead time here, but we appreciate you coming on, you know, like this, Johnny, and of course, you know him from Brittany Fox, you know him from Doro, you know him from Wasted, Blaze Bailey, so many people he's played with through the years, and we're going to hear all about his story, how, you know, kid growing up in Conshohocken, and he became, you know, this big-time drummer. Before we get started with Johnny, I do want to mention our sponsor still with us after all these many weeks and months.
Thank you very much.
The great people at Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates, they're working with autistic children, teens, and young adults. Yeah. So if this affects your family, please give them a call, 267-663-7141. Our friend Brenda runs the clinic. They do great work over there. So so please give them a call if you need help.
They do great work, and it affects a lot of families, a lot of friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go right back to the beginning. How did you guys first meet? Because I know you're like, you know, best buds now. How did how did you guys first come across each other?
Well, you kind of alluded to it when I walked in. You know, it's funny. I've gotten to be pretty close with Johnny over the last 10 years since I came back from. I lived in L.A. and San Diego, L.A., Southern California for 20 years, and when I came back. You know, Johnny was one of the people that, like, you know, for some reason we connected, and because I knew of his drumming, and social media had a lot to do with that, but we've become buds, and we meet up for coffee at times, and we commiserate over our careers and music and all that stuff, and it's been he's been a blessing as a friend to me, man, having him as a bud, because
Dave's just one of those guys that is not afraid to just reach out to somebody if it's, you know, you got a feeling, hey, maybe we ran into each other years ago.
Yeah.
I want to talk to this guy. And I think you just sent me a Facebook message or something, and we started chatting again and realized, you know, I knew you guys were in Germany all those years ago.
Right.
I've been coming over here for 25 years.
Right.
And I know I always see Hooters posters everywhere I go, all the venues.
Yeah.
So we just started talking about basically Germany and drums and everything else.
Right.
Back in the 80s and this and that and Philly. And, and then we played a show together in Sweden a few years ago. That was cool.
Which is pretty amazing, too, which makes me love Germany so much because of the fact that the Hooters could play on a metal fest. I mean, don't happen here. That does not happen here in America.
No.
And in Germany, it's one of those places. And you know what? I remember thinking, I think you said it to me. You said, oh, they're going to love you. And I went, really? and they did. And, you know, it's just amazing how they, in Germany, the audiences over there are they give you a shot, you know, and if you're rocking, if you're rocking it, they're on board, you know?
Exactly. If you play one gig here in your career, first time over, and win over crowds, you can come back here forever. I mean, they're so loyal, and they just love to be entertained, and they love good American music, good rock and roll, whatever style it is. I mean, they're very passionate about it, and I've actually come to love that. Really, a lot.
Yeah, I admire. I like it too. And the fact is that, you know, and you're right. You know, I from the get go, you know, I remember coming as the Hooters coming back here in I think '86, And we were playing, we were supporting people in arenas, and I remember we went and played clubs, and we were, I think, balking at it a little bit. But then it was now looking back that we probably wouldn't work hardly at all if we didn't go over there. And now the fact that we did, we have careers, and next year will be our 40th anniversary, which is amazing. And I remember now when we were talking about how I think somehow we were exchanging email because you were in Germany, and we talked about like trying to meet up because our, I think our tour manager was your tour manager.
That's
at
right,
one time.
Holger, yeah.
Yeah. And we all had like that connection on the road, which people that do not play music aren't aware of how, like, it's not only the band, but it's the crew. And then our crew guys sometimes, you know, there's crew guys that work on the road with us that have worked with other bands. And in this case, it was working with Doro. And you hit me. Yeah.
It did a couple years for us.
Yeah, man. And so
but
now.
Yeah, that's.
You're living there, man. You're in Fulda, man. That's incredible.
Yeah. I know. It's pretty cool. I'm actually,
And you're a father. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, dude. That's the best.
He just had a kid.
Yeah, your Dave was just telling me. Congratulations. What, boy,
thank
girl?
You
what you have?
Boy, a little boy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, his name's
Yanis. He's beautiful.
And,
I'm sorry, what's his name?
Awesome. Yanis.
Oh, cool.
Yanis.
It's spelled J-A-N-N-I-S.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
How old is he now?
He's 3 months, but he was a little bit early, and so technically he's only about a month old, but really he's been here for three, so it's like pretty wild because he's grown quick, and he's, you know, it was just a little thing in the beginning, spent some time in the clinic, and now he's home and doing great. So
is he banging on anything yet? Do you see a future drummer in your life there?
Well, he's knocked the glasses off my head a
there
couple
you go.
Times.
That's good.
So his arms are flailing already. Yeah. So
Well, congratulations to you and your beautiful wife. I mean, I think that's really awesome, Johnny. I mean, I being a father, I have one son, and I remember like, and also we got that in common. I remember when we had Sam, we didn't bring him home immediately, and and he's going on, I think, 29, 30 this year. I'm not sure, but they grow up
it's
quick.
Amazing.
I was going to say, John, when you turn around, he's going to be, you know, 16 years old, wanting to borrow the car. So, enjoy.
If I've heard anything, like, since this happened, it's everybody that's told me that has said the same exact thing. It's like, it goes so fast. And just enjoy it all.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing, man. That's very cool.
Well, he hit the jackpot, man. He's got a great dad, you know. You could tell, you know, you just got a lot of love, John. You're a good guy. Everybody I talk to just loves you. And people are very excited that you were coming on. And I know that just from just hanging with you, that it's always so authentic and real. And we just sit there bullshit,
no
have a cup of coffee. It's great.
Yeah. And just be, you know. I think we also share that in common, just to be as down to earth as possible, because really, what's the sense of being, you know, any other way? Because it just doesn't pay off in the end. But
yeah.
John, let me ask you, because you're about a decade younger than Dave. No, sorry, Dave.
I'm old. Hey, I'm getting close to Social Security, man.
Well,
63.
Based on your age on Wikipedia, you're about 10 years younger, if Wiki's accurate. But so when
I
you're
think
growing
it's
up,
off by a year. But
okay, close enough. So you're growing up in Conshohocken, and you're playing the drums. You're a hard rock, heavy metal kid, I assume. What did you think of the Hooters when you first heard them? I mean, was Dave one of the drummers that influenced you, or did you think,
putting them on a spot.
Yeah, but let's be honest. You said you're going to be real. I mean, when you first
I didn't know he was asking this, Johnny.
Really, though. I mean, for me, obviously, that Philly scene at that time was huge because we were, you know, I was just getting into playing and getting, you know, barely able to get into clubs to actually perform. You know? I mean, I remember, I think I, you know, just the radio, even to have local bands played on the radio in your city. I mean, it was like the Hazards, the Hooters, the A's, all these bands that were just like, wow, man, you have something to be proud of being from Philly. Whether you like, I mean, it wasn't even really metal back then to the extent of that it is now. No. But it was like anything that rocked to me was great. So I saw the Hooters at Central Park.
Wow.
In I think it was Central Park in Wayne, PA.
We played all those clubs. I forget sometimes if we even played there, but I played. You know how it is. You know.
Yep.
Especially
me. I mean, who remembers all the gigs we've done? But just really good stuff. And obviously, listening to the records and seeing the stuff on MTV, it was just as big for me as most of the other stuff that I was, hearing. And I never got to meet you, Dave, back then. But
we talked about it. I think the one thing Johnny said this was nice, goes, man, because we hit it off so not, we were, I remember at the coffee shop, and he said something really nice to me. He said, man, I wish we would have had this friendship years ago, when we're coming up.
But it's weird. I mean, just to be in the tri-state area, how, kind of there were little circles of pools of different kind of scenes going on, you know what I mean? Like, you guys had that sort of Philly thing, a little new wavy rock, and then there was, like, the whole thing happening over at the Galaxy in Jersey or the Empire up and like,
Tom.
With more of the hard rock stuff with Cinderella and a couple of – I played in a band called World War III.
Right.
First band I was in, and they were a little ahead of their time, man. They wrote some really great original hard rock and metal type stuff. And we used to play the Empire on the all ages Sundays and stuff like that. And there's people I met, just for example, my bass player Nick Douglas from Doro. I mean, now I'm playing with the guy 25 years, and I never actually knew him. And he lived in Blackwood, New Jersey.
No kidding.
It's like, it's weird how we all kind of traveled in smaller circles around the whole Philly Jersey scene. But
I know Nick, Nick's
the Hooters,
sweet guy.
Yeah, Nick's great, man.
But I mean, the Hooters, I mean, these guys were rock stars back then. I mean, it was. I mean, you had the you were all over MTV. You had and such a great live band. Still to this day, such a great live band.
Well,
so I'm sure for you, John, to see these guys up close in small clubs, it's like, and like you said, they're from my hometown. I mean, that had to be really cool to.
Absolutely, man. And there were tons of chicks at their shows. So that's
why I love John.
Plus.
That's so great. We are so much alike.
Like Dave's wife, Dallin, was, I'm sure, hanging out at the shows.
And Johnny is, he married well. He did well.
So thanks.
We both have a good eye.
Right.
But we've had, it's been fun becoming friends, and there was another thing that I remember at one point, because of what was going on with the Hooters, I considered moving to Germany at one time myself. I thought, I was just like, because I just thought, but you know what kept me from moving over there? The cigarettes. But you know what's amazing about Germany?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I just couldn't deal with it. It's with Germany. When they do something, they do it right. They're 100% in. We're smoking all the time. We quit.
Right.
We quit all the time. We're screwing. It's just it's just the way Germany is. It's like
on.
They're full on. Boom. Because I remember when they stopped when you flew into the airport, I used to see the flume of smoke over. When it used to come in, right? It used to blow my mind. And I remember when they outlawed the cigarettes in there, you walked in and it was completely gone. Not a cigarette, not a butt, not a nothing. All the guys in the band that smoked had to run out. Man, it was unbelievable. But that was after I considered maybe moving there,
and the language, man, is like, poor, that's probably the hardest
thing.
Do you speak any German?
How are you doing with
it? I do. Mein Deutsch is total scheiße, actually. It's really not good.
But you can go. You get around. I'll tell you, Germany is, look, you could speak English and be in Germany, because most of those Europeans in general, from Scandinavia all the way down to Germany, everybody speaks English so well.
Pretty much, And that's how I've gotten by all these years. It has changed a lot since I've been started coming here in 1993.
Yeah.
It was very Germany then, and now it's kind of, when I was back then, I was kind of looking at my health and what I was eating and stuff, and I'd be sitting at breakfast and, like, throwing my egg yolks out, and people were staring at me, like, what the hell are you doing? I'm just eating the egg whites, and they're like, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Or, like, you asked for something without cheese or butter or milk, and Nick has a lactose
Oh,
the intolerance. Right. So, you know, you should see the between the two of us trying to get like normal food or just something that isn't meat or butter or whatever the hell it is. Yeah. You know, it's always a challenge. But now they have vegan food in the supermarkets. I mean, they've come a long way.
Oh, my God. No, no question about
it. And the smoking thing has been curbed, you know, so that's great, too.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they're not healthier than most Americans over here. I mean,
Germany's amazing. I mean, for the most part, Germans, it's really a very, to me, and I may be wrong, but it just seems like such a fit country.
I was going to say,
I mean, you see summertime people get out, they're all like pretty buffed, you know?
I see yesterday out for a walk. I mean, old elderly couples on bikes just going cross country and you know, not that people don't do that in the States, but I mean, it's just more of a way of life here. People, you know, Sundays, all the stores are closed. People go out, they walk, they spend the time with their family, and they're holding on to certain things that, you know, are typically German. But, you know, the world is closing in on them quick, and a lot of stuff's changing. Yeah. People want to change rules. But it's great. I mean, it's
I love
it's a beautiful place. And
The vacation that you the summers, I mean, from in August, it almost feels, other than the festival season, it feels a little bit like Germany shuts down, people take vacations, you know? It's changed, but at one point it was really August, we're done. And a lot of, you know, that's true in Scandinavia and places like that, but they really understand that whole, you know, a defragging thing in your brain. You need to get away and chill.
Take their time to recharge and stuff like that. They have a better system, I think, to avoid, you know, some of the pitfalls that we have from overworking or just, you know, over everything, you know. But it's good though, because you know there's a lot of opportunity for bands and musicians.
Oh my God,
and they keep the people busy, you know.
Yeah,
they love their concerts.
Well, let me just tell you this, man. You are missed here, man. You know, not only by me, but you are. I mean, you got a great, great vibe, and, you know, your friends miss you. And I know Germany, this was a great thing for you. You know, family, moving on with your life and doing this and being in Germany. I think, you know, it's a start of something really special for you. But, you know, you're missed in Kanchi, my brother.
Well, let's go back from let's go back from modern.
Thanks, bro.
Modern Germany to early 80s Philadelphia. And how does a Philly kid, and you were still a kid at this point, end up with the British band Wasted? I mean, how did
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because that's pretty much, I mean, you know, you mentioned World War III, but Wasted is really where it got you on, you know, on a bigger stage. Yeah, Pete Way from UFO. Yeah. Right. So how did that
Paul Chapman.
Yeah, how did that whole happen for you?
So after, you know, a couple the logical progression we all make from the basement to the garage to the, you know, cover songs to actually creating originals and a couple bands that I was in. I was in a band called Fragile with John Karabi first. That was the first band I ever played original music in.
Uh-huh.
And that was pretty cool. Jimmy Marciano from Get the Lead Out.
Yeah.
Played with Jimmy and LeCompte. I mean, there's like all these connections.
Yeah.
You know, lifelong connections. But then so World War III, I think I was in World War III at the time, and I was a big fan of, you know, British new wave of heavy metal, you know, and a lot of bands like UFO were one of my top favorite bands.
And love them.
Yeah. So basically, I saw UFO a couple times on tour, and I really loved them, and had a bunch of their records. And then Pete Way quit. Did a stint with Fastway, which he fell out of real quick. And then he formed Wasted, which another connection to Philly was that Ronnie Cayfield was the first guitar player in Wasted. So another Philly guy that got in there. But the band went on and went through members and got dropped and re-signed and blah, blah, blah. And one day, I used to buy Kerrang! Magazine religiously up at Record Revolution and Valley Forge Shopping Center.
Nice,
Kerrang!
Remember that,
love it.
And reading this thing in the front, and it says, Paul Chapman from UFO is living in Florida, and he's got a band called Ghost, actually, he was the name of his band, and he was looking for players. Mm. So I brought this magazine over to my friend Jimmy DeLella's place, who was my best friend at the time, and living in Belmont Hills. So I go to his place. I go, Jim, there's an ad. Paul Chapman is in Florida. He's looking for you, man. You play guitar and keyboards. You're like the man. You got to get in touch with him. So he's like, holy shit. So he calls him up or sends him. Yeah. There's no email or anything. Right. You know, barely even a phone number. Sure. He had to send like a letter with his resume.
I remember those days.
Right?
Yeah.
They're ridiculous, you know, like the long shot from hell. So Paul actually calls his parents' house, and we're downstairs. And then his dad gets on the cellar steps. Jimmy, get up here. There's a Paul Chapman from Florida calling.
Get up here.
And we're like, holy shit. Yeah. So he gets the call, and Paul's like totally into reading what he's done and his skills. And he's like, I want you to come down here. So basically, long story short, my buddy Jimmy gets this gig.
Yeah.
Goes down to Florida with like 2 cents and a U-Haul with all his shit.
Oh, that's so great.
Plays with Paul, does all this stuff, opening for Ted Nugent, blah, blah, blah. He's telling me all this shit. I'm like, holy Christ, my buddy's going to be like a real rock star. You know what I mean? So after, you know, 6 months of all this great stuff and not eating, there's like, okay, when do we get paid? Oh, sorry, it's there's no checks yet, right?
There's no, that's not part of the deal.
Right. So basically they go through like 6 months of like boot camp, and Paul comes up with zilch. No money, no deal. So he goes, screw it, I'm going to go back to England with the demos, and I'm going to, you know, knock on doors of people that actually know me, British labels, you know, UFO. You say UFO in Florida, nobody really gives a shit.
Right. Yeah, they think NASA.
London and you got a whole, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
So he does, and in the process runs into Pete, who was looking for a guitar player for Wasted at the time. And so basically Paul joins Wasted when he's over there starting, like trying to shop his demo for his Florida band. Because he needed dough too. So now Paul's in Wasted in England, calls Jimmy up. We need a keyboard player. So now my best friend flies to England to play with Pete Way and Paul Chapman. I'm like, holy shit. So, you know, they're doing TV shows. They're making a record. You know, they went through the whole process. And so now Jimmy DeLella is in Wasted. And guess who's playing drums? Jerry Shirley.
Shirley, humble pie.
Unbelievable. So I'm like, dude, you're playing with fucking Jerry Shirley. I can't believe it. So
my hero.
They did a record. Yeah, yeah. Great. Mm. They did a record called The Good, The Bad, and The Wasted. You should check it out, Dave, if you ever get a chance. Jerry swings crazy.
No one swings rock like that guy. He's amazing.
Dude, it's so awesome. So basically, after that whole phase, Jerry didn't want to tour. He didn't want to go crazy with the rock lifestyle. And even to keep up with Pete and Paul was a lot of work. You know? Those guys were maniacs.
Wow.
Yeah. In the weirdest twist of fate, they say, okay, they auditioned Filthy Animal Taylor from Motorhead.
Right.
He played with them for a little bit.
Right.
And then he did something and they were like, all right, we need a drummer. And Jimmy goes, I got the guy. My buddy from the U.S., from Philly, Johnny D., he's great, blah, blah, blah. He looks good. He's really young. And they were like, okay, cool. So I get a call from their manager, and he's like, hello, Johnny. We would like to fly you over to audition for the band. And I'm like, okay, great, you know. So to this day, I still don't know how the hell or why they flew me and my entire kit over to freaking England to basically either kick ass or fall flat on my face. So I've never heard of anybody having their kit flown to an audition, but I think I basically had the gig to lose on my own, you know.
And what are you like? What are you like, 20, 21 years old at this point?
I was 21. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I show up in North Wales. in like and get picked up by at the airport by my Scottish drum tech, who I can't even understand when he's yelling out my
right.
name.
Right,
right. Hey, oh, Johnny, are you from? And I'm like, what, dude? What language is that? Like, I've
exactly.
never been to England before.
Yeah, right.
You know,
you need subtitles.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, we go to North Wales, and this is the day of like budgets and renting out houses to yeah. write and record.
Sure.
So we end up in this farmhouse in the north of Wales.
Wow.
And I play with the band. I get the gig.
Yeah.
We start writing for a record for EMI, and then all kinds of crazy shit started happening. Oh. I mean, we were living in a town called Monmouth, which is where Rockfield Studios mm-hmm. is, and yeah. So many albums. Bohemian Rhapsody was
right.
recorded there. That
yeah.
pretty much says it all.
Yeah.
And then we walk into a pub, and Robert Plant is there playing pool.
Yeah.
Me and Jimmy played a game of you know, snooker with Robert Plant and
oh
his
my,
brother-in-law.
Oh, you must have been...
Like, where's the video camera now?
I know, dude.
Right?
How do you even where's describe what phone? That feels like?
Yeah.
You're a 21-year-old kid
yeah.
over in England, and you're playing pool with
well,
Robert
yeah.
Plant? Holy shit.
That was ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
Amazing.
You know. So, and then the biggest thing was that Steve Harris from Iron Maiden was a huge UFO fan, particularly Pete Way was
right.
like his hero.
Yeah.
And you know this because Pete used to wear the striped pants, the
right.
polka-dotted outfits that Nikki Sixx later
yep.
stole off.
Yeah, Pete
and
was
the
a...
Thunderbird bass
yep.
is Pete Way.
Yes.
I mean, that was it. So,
Pete was very cool.
Very influential.
Yeah.
And so Steve Harris, now mega with Maiden, wants to pay it back and help Pete out get a deal. So he brings Wasted to EMI Capital and says, you know,
sign
I want
him.
You guys to look after them and blah, blah, blah. So now I'm looking at getting signed to EMI, and Steve Harris is like taking the band under his wing. So he comes over, he's like watching us rehearse.
Wow.
Get to meet him. We go to his house. It's this giant mansion with like, you know, all this Iron Maiden memorabilia and stage props.
Yeah.
He's got sarcophaguses
yeah.
inside his house and big Eddies out on the front lawn.
Wow.
And I was just blown away by it all. And
wow.
then, you know, my first gig was at the Marquee Club.
Yes.
We were basically showcasing
Love
for
it.
EMI. And yeah, just one thing after another
wow.
blowing my mind.
Wow.
Our sound guy was Bobby Pridden, who was the Who's first
yes.
roadie and monitor guy.
Wow.
And he was mixing us, and
yeah.
I later did a tour with him. We opened for Maiden,
yeah.
did a record on EMI, you know, did all this cool stuff in Europe, and then we came to the States with Maiden, did the Summer in Time tour.
Yeah.
So that was it. That
yeah.
blew it all wide open.
Dave, Dave and I have been doing this show for 40 episodes now. That might have been the best story we've
yeah,
heard yet. That's just incredible.
It really is incredible. I just love hearing it, and I love the fact, like, hearing about what you know, the way it started, like what you had to do, the whole phone call thing with your friend
right.
in Florida calling your father. I mean, that's the way it used to be back in the day. If you really want, Johnny, you went 110%, man. I want this. I'm going to go after it, and I'm good. And you did it. I mean, you did what you had to do.
Too. I mean,
no
I,
one was going to say
just,
no, right? It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, even to have your best friend go to bat for you like
yeah.
that in a professional
yeah.
organization
yeah.
is very, you know, I mean, that could have jeopardized his position.
Sure.
Big
well,
time.
And
rare.
The fact,
you know?
And the fact that Pete and Paul respected him enough to take his word for it that you were good, I mean,
yeah.
that, you know, obviously had to play a part in it,
right.
too. They really had to you
yeah.
know, have respect for him.
Yeah. And you know, and later on when we all found out, oh, this is how the business works, we
yeah.
realized that, like, they're going to get some stupid young fucking kids to do this gig because
yeah.
they can do whatever the hell they want after
right.
that. So,
yeah.
you know, it's all a learning process.
Mm.
But at that time, like you said, Dave, there
yeah.
was no, you know, there's no YouTube, hey,
no.
here, we're great. Or
no.
I mean, it was literally either you did what the Hooters did, which
yeah.
is create a bunch, a
yeah.
gang of guys.
Yeah.
friends in your own town
yes.
and kick ass
leverage
out
man
world.
You know,
or you get a recommendation
yeah.
or an audition somehow. I
right.
mean, you know, Philly, Conshohocken. I mean, there's no auditions
happening. No, no one's showing up.
Most of the world can't even pronounce Conshohocken.
Yeah, you know, right. I mean, it's like you have to build, you have to make it so undeniably powerful, or you have to have this like recommendation. But you're right, man. It's unbelievable.
You also,
it's great stuff.
You have to be, I think you have to be, you know, be able to hang, be a cool yes. dude, and have yeah. people not go, this yeah. guy's really good, but he's an absolute
oh
asshole.
My god, you well who wants to be in a bus with somebody like that,
right?
Carmine Rojas told me that, and Carmine said that to me one day. He said, you know, he was like, Dave, you know, you could be the greatest player in the world, but if you're jack offs, you know, nobody wants to be around you, man. It's just like, you got
pretty much, man,
you know, you gotta be able to
that
hang.
Was it, that's how it all started for Little Johnny from Conshohocken.
Little Johnny from Conshohocken.
we got so much we want to get to with you, John. So let's jump ahead to Brittany Fox, and because this is, you know, here's a, you know, glam hair metal band from Philly that, you know, makes it pretty big, and you're a big part of it, and
Dean.
Those days must have been pretty wild, I imagine.
It was. I mean, I had cut my teeth on that Maiden experience. You know, we toured all of the states with Maiden opening up. So with two legendary arena rock guys in my band, Paul and Pete,
right,
learning to basically work a crowd as a support band for Iron Maiden. It's not the most, cushy gig in the world. It's like, you know, you better kick ass or you're going to get like basically pelted with bottles or something, you know.
Exactly.
So we kicked ass on that tour. We went over really good. We had a great singer, Danny Vaughn, who actually went on to do Taiketto, and he's a really, you know, phenomenal voice, and he was just soaring in the arenas and stuff. So we all learned a lot. I mean, I learned how to basically play in
an
that
arena
position.
And
to do the whole life. So we got to the end of that tour. Right. We were out in L.A. We were supposed to do like an opening slot for Heart or something. And then all of a sudden, like the next day, I hear that Paul got sent home by the management and we're going to be auditioning guitar players. Oh. And I was like, what the hell?
Oy.
So I was like, where is this band going now? You know, and I didn't know what was going to happen. It looked pretty scary. We started auditioning every guy from, you know, from the Guitar Institute and all these shredder dudes. Mm. And
that's
it was
a nightmare.
Just like, it was kind of like, man, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Right.
But we did get a guy who was cool, a young kid.
Yeah.
And we did some gigs out west to kind of see how it was all working out. But at that time, I got a call from the Brittany Fox guys, Michael Shermack in particular. And he was like, look, we... so funny because Adam Ferrioli was the drummer before me,
and get the
preceding
out.
Him,
preceding
Adam was Tony Destro,
right,
who was a killer drummer.
Rest in peace,
was, it was
Cinderella's
the original
first drummer
in Cinderella, right? And so Adam was getting put aside, unfortunately, by the label, and they were like, "We need a younger guy," and whatever politics that are involved.
Yeah.
This is what's
And Adam's
happening.
A great drummer too. It's just that's unfortunate.
Dude. I mean, Adam was like the first guy I ever saw that blew my mind in a club, and I was, you know, family friend for years, and I was
And he loves Jerry Shirley too.
Right.
Right.
Don't
and one of
all.
Us. One of us. Yeah.
So, so I get the call and Brittany wants me to come back east to Philly and audition and possibly do this gig because they just got signed to Columbia and they wanted to, you know, solidify the band. And I'm like, how can I turn this down?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I did. I basically told Wasted that I really didn't see the future here, you know, and I was going to go back home and check into something else. And that was, again, another thing. I flew home, played with them for a couple hours, and then they were like, all right, let's do this. We're recording the debut in, like, you know, 2 months from now. And we went out and did some shows. I got tight with the band and learned all the songs and the parts, and we did a bunch of killer pre-release shows around Philly and Jersey. And you know, that
was
kind of like Yeah, it was right big. On the launching pad yeah. when I jumped in there. Because, right. I mean, you know, 2 months later, the record came out and we were, you know, getting videos and right. getting on MTV mm. and doing big tours with Poison and mm. Just getting out of the Philly area, which was like a pretty thrilling thing. But I, you know, I felt kind of confident because I had had the experience of touring arenas right. before, and none of those guys did. So
MTV was a big deal too. I remember that was like, God, it's so dude. Different than it is now. And people that don't know, MTV was a music channel. It was unbelievable. And if you got on MTV, it changed your life, man. It was unbelievable.
Well, for us, and I mean, even, you know, especially Britney Fox was a band that really didn't have any radio hits. Right. I mean, we literally sold, you know, we went gold just off of MTV. Our videos and a little bit of rock radio.
Wow.
Just from MTV, you know, the Countdown every day, yeah. stuff like that, just yeah. from fans, you yeah. know? So it was cool. It was kind of a grassroots thing that just kind of happened. I mean, luckily those guys had a vision, you know, Dean had a vision of the band and the look and this and that and all yeah. the songs written. We didn't yeah. have to go in the studio and rewrite yeah. shit with a producer and yeah. all this nonsense that yeah. some bands have to go through right. all to be not released in the end of the day anyway.
Yeah.
So we were just, you know, we had it, the package there. Right. All it needed was the distribution, John, and to just to put it out there.
You said something interesting to me, John. So you had the arena experience. So none of these other guys did. I mean, did you kind of have to give them any guidance or advice because normally, I mean,
Dean.
yeah. I think us as drummers, you know, yeah. it's always yeah. kind of like we're the grounded guy of the band, you know, who yeah. hopefully keeps everybody on the same page or just keeps everybody kind of chill or
yeah.
And I kind of took that role more than saying, hey, you know, you should do this. But I did suggest some parts, you know, this should yeah. be a crowd bit here yeah. or this should be that. But I mean, those guys knew what they were doing. They were all older than me anyway.
Right,
so
right.
it's like, yeah. you know, they've been doing it forever. Yeah. And you know, and Dean was just, you know, basically doing his show, you know. Yeah.
Very driven.
And, yeah.
Very driven. You totally. Guys had the whole glam thing. I mean, I'll tell you, because I remember the hair and the clothes. I mean, it was
the hair. I mean,
amazing.
The reason where we are with the environment right now is because of Britney Fox and the goddamn hairspray.
Yeah. No, I had it too, man. We might have even kind of gotten going a little bit, and they went to another level.
Yes, definitely. Britney Fox took it to a whole other level. If you go back and look at the videos or the pictures from those days, you guys had that look down.
At that point where it was so congested with bands, I mean, it was yeah. like any little thing you could do to stick out. So yeah. we had a, you know, luckily had the smallest of small little niche that we had, you know, with the ruffled shirts and
right.
the shit like that.
Yeah,
and,
I dug that.
And
I dug
the hair
it.
And, you know, whatever. Yeah. But yeah. You
Lenny
know.
Kravitz stole it from me.
Hey, Taylor, let's hear a little bit of a Long Way to Love while we keep talking to Johnny. This was from Britney Fox's debut album. This was one of the singles off the album, along with Girl School.
Yeah, it was the first video and single.
Hey, do you remember where'd you record it? Do you remember where you recorded this?
Dude, at the warehouse.
Oh, no kidding. It wasn't Lance Quinn, though. It was engineering, was he?
We had a guy named John Jansen who produced an engineer.
Yeah, I knew John.
The engineer was a guy named Nelson Ayers engineered. Uh-oh.
Wow.
And, you know, total low budget.
Right.
Not low budget, but I mean, for that time, I think we made the whole record for like 80 grand or something, which was not a hell of a lot. For
That's a big budget
like
these
that.
Days.
Right, right. Yeah. And a small one then. You know?
Yeah.
Trust
me.
Yeah, the warehouse. They did tracks at the warehouse, and I think they did the overdubs up in like the Oranges in Jersey or whatever. But good time.
Wow.
That Girl School intro, we brought a bunch of chicks in the studio down there and just like had them all recreate the classroom environment. And,
there you go.
Yeah.
Wow. Rocking.
Should we stop talking for a minute and Taylor, should we put it up, Taylor? Let's let the people rock out for a few minutes.
Long way.
There you go. Rocking on
Johnny. What, does that take you back, man? When you hear that, I mean, yeah. Does it take you back? Do anything pop into your head when you remember those days?
Just the guitar solo alone. I mean, yeah. When's the last time you heard a guitar solo in a song for like 16 bars or something? It's like, holy shit.
It was a different world, man.
Yeah, you know? Just lead guitar for days. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the whole recording of that and then, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
It was cool to be in a band, you know, finally, or what I thought was a band at the time, to be in a different, little bit of a different position, to be feel like an equal part of something. You know, the Wasted thing was always like,
you were
all about Pete and Paul, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's four guys. I mean, we kind of, I guess the vision was to be like four personalities or four guys like Kiss or like the Beatles or whatever, you know, just.
Yeah.
And each guy has his own sort of, you know, style or whatever. And just to be, you know, to be that way and to take that sort of further out of Philly and into the.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
we went.
Plus, you were repping your hometown on a national stage.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
It was.
Yeah. It was like, oh, I'm back home playing with actual like guys I know, like, and, you know, so it was a little bit. Closer to home, you know, and it felt good. I mean, playing around Philly to crazy, you know, sold out shows and just the energy that was around that whole thing when it was ready to go, you know, it was really cool.
Did you ever do a show with Cinderella? Did you guys ever do a show together?
That's how they got signed. They opened for Cinderella at the Wildwood Convention Center when Cinderella had like blown out, you know, they had the first record out and they were just like kicking major ass, and I think as a favor to Michael, Tom had them open up because basically he had to basically fire him, Michael, and Tony from the band when they got signed to Polygram. So I think he always felt a little bit
bad,
crappy about that. So they, you know, he's like, let's throw them a bone, let them open the Wildwood show, and that's the night that the A&R guy from Columbia decided to sign the band because he saw them in front of whatever that was,
and 4,000
people, and people going crazy, an unsigned band with these great arena, you know, anthems, and so yeah, that was the only time though we. Once I joined the band, I think Adam was in the band at that time. Yeah. Once I joined the band, we never played with Cinderella again. In fact, it was always kind of this, you know, people saying we were a Cinderella ripoff and this and that. And it just kind of like got a little bit weird. But
I think it's great that you played drums on the back then. You know, I don't know what happened with Cinderella, but I remember I knew Jody Cortez a little bit, who played. I played drums on that first record a little bit. I think he played on Shake Me, and
the
I
whole
knew,
thing.
And
yeah.
I know Judy from playing. I mean, he wasn't even like a metal, a great rock drummer, but he did all. I mean, he played with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I believe. You know, he did a lot of stuff in L.A.
So he just had the
But he was a great session. Yeah, he knew that thing. But you know, you ended up playing drums on Britney Fox's record, and it could have been. You know, a lot of times the drummer is subjected to the producer whims of like, oh, we're going to get a real drummer in. You know what I mean? And you know, that says a lot about you. When they bring, okay, our guy's doing it and he can do it, you know?
Yeah, I think just, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, you know, you can't really argue with Andy Johns if he wants to do
what he wants to do,
you know,
exactly.
Bring tracks or a drummer in to make it better. Or I don't know. Those guys seem to have a hell of a time with drummers over the years. But Fred Corey is unbelievable.
I love
great.
Freddie, too. I know Fred. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Funny.
But for us, it was just like, you know, these guys are, you know, I mean, it was not that type of thing. Mm. John Jansen was fine if I could play in time and just do the, you
That's
know, because all the parts
part.
Were there. It wasn't like, you know, there wasn't any rocket science going on, and you know,
speaking of which,
probably took go ahead.
It's so funny because when you I got when you started the podcast, David Prater just sent me a text to produced Dream Theater and produced Arcade, and it would tell me funny stories about stuff like who was like a ridiculous like fusion rock drummer but producer. But I was thinking, you know, so, you know, we would always talk about the like that whole session thing and. I knew Freddie well, so it was funny.
What about we're talking about the music? What about behind the scenes? I mean, the stories around the glam metal scene in the '80s are legendary. You know,
you getting at the ladies here?
Well, I'm just about? You got any stories of that lifestyle that you can
debauchery,
share?
Debauchery, Johnny. That's where Andy's going.
Well, you know, it's the muckraking journalist in me.
Exactly.
Like I said, the stories of that scene and the bands from that era are. You know, the whole Motley Crue the movie, whatever. But I'm just wondering if you got any good stories you can share, of anything a little wild or crazy or.
Always. I mean, there was, you know, at that point, it was like, you know, life for the taking, you know, still. Yeah. It was pretty much you could, if you wanted to go that route, you could, and you could go pretty much as far as you really wanted to. But we. Let's see, Poison, we toured with Poison, and that was an experience in itself because they had a condom machine right at the entry of their tour bus. So that was pretty like, oh, okay, that's how it works. Cool. Let's go, you know, check this out. And they basically would be, I mean, their leftovers every night were like way too much.
Did you ever play in Little Rock? Johnny.
Oh God, I met Connie.
Yeah, me
she
too.
Wanted to like, well, hey. Yeah, she wanted to get, you know, get closer, and I was like, man, no way. Maybe back in the day, but not now. You're not looking.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a school teacher.
Really?
Substitute school teacher. Yeah, which was unbelievable.
That's always the case.
Yeah, it was just great. She had a trailer
twisted.
By the venue, which was like, are you kidding me?
But yeah, we also had a Polaroid book going at one point that was like,
one of our
documentation of the debauchery.
Exactly.
That and
it was a different day.
Again, yeah. what if cell phones existed back then? A picture, you know, you could take pictures on your phone back then. I mean, just imagine.
Yeah, well, there'd be some big trouble, you know, the reality but on that. But I remember Freddie Corey once, when he met Ken Hensley, he said to Ken, the first thing is, well, so, and it was kind of weird. He said, so what was it like touring before AIDS? You know, because it was like a whole different thing. There was a little more conscience. You know, people were like, oh, wait a minute. People are dying out here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But people didn't give a shit. They were doing whatever.
Well, Poison had the condom machine. So they were.
Yeah, they were being somewhat responsible. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it was. Yeah, I think we had the final sort of wave of that whole thing. You know, we were lucky enough to get in at the tail end and we caught a few good waves, but after that it sort of died down a bit. But yeah, we did experience, you know.
But it was exciting.
As much as you possibly could or wanted to, but without getting, you know, without killing yourself. Nobody in the band really did any heavy drugs or anything.
That's great.
I think we were pretty tame for the most part, but you know, every once in a while you let your big hair down.
I love it, man. I love that you had that whole thing going on. And then the fact that you just have kept keeping on because you love to play and you love the environment and you love to be a part of a posse, a band. That's never really left you. You've always enjoyed that whole thing, you know. How do you feel about
it? I do. How do I feel
about it these days, man? I mean, it's like something you still really dig, man. You know, going out and playing with Dora.
Yeah,
and
a gig is a gig to me. Yeah. I mean, I spent 6 years in LeCompte back in Philly, and I enjoyed that, you know, as much as anything, playing close to home, you know, with Mike.
Mike's a good guy.
Yeah,
he's super
a great
good
dude.
Guy.
And,
yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I do really still enjoy the thrill of it. Just every day walking into a different city or a different venue, and you know,
you're an adventurer,
to a bunch of people. And
but we haven't. I'm sorry, John. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we haven't even talked yet about Doro, who's you know,
she's massive
in the metal world. Yeah,
massive,
especially in Europe. Obviously, yeah. one of the biggest, you know, names on the planet.
What a personality!
And you've been with her since, I guess, what, 1993.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, just talk a little bit about, you know, playing in her band, and we're running late on time, but
okay.
I know our European listeners want to hear, you know, just about her. Dora, of course, being from Warlock, and you know, then going solo, and you've been
That's
with her for
right.
a long time. What's that been like?
Yeah, it's been great, actually. She's just a sweetheart. She's a badass. I mean, she's many things all rolled into one, and she's like the most
adored there.
Humbled and really passionate, you know, to her fans and stuff. And I learned a whole new way of doing things when I joined her band. I mean, this is 93, so we're talking grunge at its full, you know, strength, and metal dying horribly, or hair metal or whatever in the States. And so I land a gig and I come to Germany and I'm like, holy shit, you know, this chick's playing to, you know, 8,000-10,000 people, or doing these giant festivals. I never played a festival in my life until I got into Duro, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what a festival was.
They're
unless
unreal.
It was like Frampton at JFK or something, you know. But so basically come over here sort of resuscitates my career and my love of what I was doing totally, you know, and it kind of gave me a whole new life and way of looking at things. And I, you know, my first tour with her, six gigs in, we did a live album for Polydor and a live video and all this stuff. And, you know, after the death of Britney and that whole thing, it kind of was like, wow, this is really cool. And being in a different country and just seeing, traveling around and learning, you know, different things and whatnot. But yeah, it was a great experience. And Doro is just a sweetheart.
She's
like
a real pro. I watched her.
Man,
I remember on the side of stage, I went and watched her and I was really impressed. I was impressed by the whole thing. I watched you on TV do a performance. I was going home. I think I spoke to you that night because we didn't hook up. But I remember watching you on TV, and then I was on the side of the stage when we did the festival together, and I just, the way she worked it, the way you all worked it, and she's just like, and then meeting, you introduced me to her, and she was very soft-spoken, and then when she comes out, it's like, holy shit, she has such, you know, and, you know, work in it, and she's just, she is all that when she comes out on stage.
Yeah, it's very unique, man.
Yes.
It's weird, because she gets sort of in a trance where, like, the band, you know, is behind her, but she's more connected to the people and wants them to kind of, and it's weird, man, when they start reciprocating, it's like, holy shit.
There's
like,
this guttural thing she has in her vocal that I really kind of, I walked away impressed by that and feeling. I felt it when she, what is that song? There was a song, I don't know if we had, but there was a song that you did at the end where she has the audience singing. There's probably a lot of them, but there was one in particular that you did.
All We Are, maybe.
Oh, yes, that's the one. Yeah. Oh, my God. I wanted to come on stage and just like stand with her, just to feel it. But I felt it on the side. It was amazing.
You know, just for people in the States who may not be that familiar with her, Johnny sent us one song from last year's Forever Warriors, Forever United album. The song's called Heartbroken. Let's just hear a little of it so people can get an idea of who we're talking about.
I'm dying inside. I see only
powerful, man. She even when she gets subtle, you know, it's something real.
I wanted to say that she really, like the song you mentioned, All We Are, is just her ultimate anthem, you know. Oh. But I mean, she's got so many other styles, and so she's really cool. I mean, that's what I always dug. It was like sort of a metal band, but we are like one of the only metal bands that has that sort of variety of doing like ballads that make people cry in the middle of the set. She's got a song in German called "For Immer," forever.
Yeah.
And I mean, I never saw someone in the audience crying. Really crying until I was like playing with her and or singing in German and just like tears going or hugging their man and kissing. And
wait,
it's like so emotional, man.
People don't cry when Brittany Fox plays Girl School?
They cry sometimes when Dean but sang not for or that. Whatever. But
yeah, that song is like your Johnny. It's like Johnny B for us, which is weird. In Germany, people love that. That's, you know, we get a reaction in Germany that's very like that. And I don't know if it's the progression, you know, the minor chords, whatever. But it does that thing. And I noticed that it's exactly what I saw when you guys played. You know, different than, you know, I think the Dead Daisies played that day. We were rocking. It was great seeing Brian and all those guys play. But when you guys played, there was this, it was that connection she had with her audience that I was just like, I get it. I get this, man. And it's so cool. And now you're playing a lot in the Soviet Union. What, you know, over there?
There's no Soviet Union.
Well, you know what I mean. The Russia, you know. I know. I'm old. Yeah. We were talking about that. I'm a baby boomer, right? I called the Soviet Union.
We've
stuff,
been
but,
a, we've been to Russia about 10 times. We're going
they love
back
you there.
In September.
That's cool.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Passion from, you know, it kind of. The further east you go, it's like the time sort of winds back a bit. You know, the first time we went to Russia in like 2003 or something, it was like, holy shit, is this 1982 again? Yeah. I mean, it was like, what is, these people are going mad, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's great to do
I
it.
Mean, like you said earlier, Dave, way back in the beginning of this, you said that, you know, you guys kept going to Germany and working. Yeah. Even though it was small venues, like not many people did. American bands that could just tour the States round and round and round and make a bunch of dough just stayed there. But the bands that came over here and worked it are now able to continue.
Bon Jovi does that. Bon Jovi did that. He went over and he worked his audience. I remember the thing that amazed me once when about Germany is, and I didn't realize, because Van Halen, massive here in America, right? Arenas. And then they were opening for Bon Jovi in Germany. They were opening for Bon Jovi, because John would always go over and play and worked it, even through his changes musically, whatever, and whatever you think of Bon Jovi. But that guy was working, and he understood that that was his market too, you know? You know, it's, you can't say enough about
it. To not be afraid to go, you know, a lot of bands, I think, got sort of scared to come over here because they'd either lose a shit ton of money or whether it was like fear of, you know, who knows what. But I mean, Iron Maiden, they taught me that way in the beginning. I mean, they would go to Poland.
Yes.
You know, we went actually behind the Iron Curtain with them, opened some shows in what was Yugoslavia. We went to Budapest, Hungary. We went and did all these gigs. And at that time, for me, first time I was in Berlin, I mean, the wall was still up.
Yeah, me
so
too.
I was like learning a whole history lesson.
Wow.
You know, and playing music. Yeah. I mean, that was an amazing time. Yeah. In my life for me, you know, and
exactly.
But to see that bands that took the time to work a European crowd, definitely it pays off in the end.
We had that in common, man. I remember I went over there too before. We played in Berlin before the wall, then I went across, and it was a remarkable thing, man. I'm glad I experienced it, because there are places now that I go that used to be, you know, East Germany, that are like unbelievable because they sunk so much money into it. It's remarkable.
Right.
It's unreal.
I know.
It's unreal. That's what's
cool.
Happening there, man. Very
it
cool.
Is.
You're living in a great place, man. A great time. It's very cool.
Hey, John, we got to wrap things up, unfortunately, but I was just wondering if there's anything you want to promote, because we have listeners all over the world, so you have any shows coming up anywhere, you know, that you want to...
We're doing Summerfest with Doro, just some small ones this year. We got some in Germany, and we're actually doing a festival in on Crete, the island of Crete in Greece, which is cool. We haven't done much there. Coming up in July, end of July or August, I think. And then September, Russia. And we pretty much do a winter tour every year, like November, December, around Germany and the rest of like Switzerland, Austria, wherever we can get to at that time. So that's what we're still promoting, the new record with Doro. And yeah, pretty much going to continue. My commutes are much shorter now. I just go by train instead of like a transatlantic flight.
And they're on time, John. They're on time.
Well, it's getting bad, man.
Really?
I don't know what's happening. Yeah, dude. Deutsche Bahn's going crazy. Cause
hard to
weird.
Believe, man.
I know. The Swiss still have it together, but Germany's kind of falling back a few notches.
We did a commercial once for the Deutsche Bahn. It was awesome.
Did you?
Yeah, cool. Man. It was a great gig. It was awesome.
You guys going to be over here again
this next
summer?
Year. Not this summer, but we'll be next year. It's our 40th, so we'll be over quite a bit from what I understand. And,
We'll hang.
So, what about you getting over here? I guess that's not happening anytime soon? Or
it will. We did a short run in April, May. It was about 13, 14 shows with Metal Church, kind of a co-headlining thing. Yeah. And that's being talked about. To get back to the States and Canada. Maybe, I don't know what's open at this point. It might be, you know, by this time, if it's booked, you know, now it's going to be like February or something. But it will happen. Doro keeps talking about it. So I'm pretty sure she's wanting to get back to the States. So
awesome.
We lost a lot of ground over there. We need to, make it up.
You will.
We need to do a nice long tour in the States.
Nice. Well,
cool.
I appreciate you giving. I can't imagine with a 3-month-old you getting any sleep. So you know, giving us this hour has been. We really appreciate it,
man.
My hour of actual sanity, you know.
Oh man, I tell you.
But now it's so cool, man. I'm kind of high on adrenaline. I don't even care. Like I'll change diapers. I'll do whatever it takes, man. I actually look forward to doing that.
I know.
It's like
how about the smell of his head? I remember when I still remember the smell of the top of Sam's head. Yeah. It was are you kidding me?
Like
you know,
little
angel and that
dust.
Changes.
Right.
Oh, man, that's so awesome. Yeah. I'm so happy for you, man.
He smells great, and I haven't showered for a week. So
I remember those days.
I got, puke and milk all
over
me. Oh,
man,
so
but you're
awesome.
Loving every minute of it, man. That's really great.
Totally.
That's really great. It's really great, John. We miss you, man, and I'll tell you, it's been really nice chatting with you, man. Absolutely great catching up.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. Let's
John,
it was
great to meet you over the phone, and hopefully, we'll definitely talk again. So great Johnny D.
Johnny D.
The great Johnny D.
All right, Johnny. All right, brother.
Thank you,
thanks,
guys.
Johnny.
All right, man.
Cheers.
All right, we'll see you.
Wow.
Yeah, he was great. Let's hear from our sponsors of Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates, and then David and I will be back to wrap things up and talk a little bit.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Gabe, and I have autism. When I was diagnosed with autism, I realized it was hard for me to do what people call normal. For example, I would get easily upset and overreact to small problems. When it was time for me to go to college, I had an especially hard time. That's when I went to Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates.
Gabe made the right choice.
They helped me prepare for college with my interests in mind. They taught me coping strategies, organization skills, and self-advocacy. Not only that, they boosted my confidence using evidence-based treatment programs such as Think Confident, Be Confident. This helped me prepare for employment opportunities as a peer mentor here at Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates.
We are dedicated to improving the lives of teens and young adults with autism.
Thanks to them, I'm better prepared for college and can continue my life's journey. Now I can pursue a career in animation and continue my job as a peer mentor. Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates in Lansdale, PA. Call us at 267-663-7141.
All right. Dave and I are back here on episode 40 of the In the Pocket podcast. And, you know, Dave, we wanted to come back strong after being off for 3 weeks.
Johnny
and, you know,
was
a milestone
fantastic.
Episode. And what a great guest you got.
He's a terrific guy, man. Smart, living a great life. And I just can't say enough about that guy.
Yeah, and it's still, you know, I mean, it's Britney Fox has still played in recent years. Yeah. They've had, you know, various reunions through the years. And Doro, who, you know, like I said, people in the United States might not be familiar with, but she's huge in Europe. And, you know, check her out. Doro Pesch is a P-E-S-C-H is her actual name, but the band just goes by Doro.
Terrific. And, she's wonderful.
What a voice.
Yeah.
Hey, we have to mention a sad.
AD.
Yeah. Adrian?
Yeah.
This is our first show since our very close friend Adrian Hickman passed away. Supporter of the show and the entire Philadelphia music scene.
Yeah, he's
been
amazing.
He loved every one of our guests that we had on. Adrian probably saw live at some point.
Many times.
At least the Philly ones. And he was a fixture at so many. Even after, you know, he got sick, he was a fixture at so many shows in the area. In the pocket, of course.
All the time.
And the family, you know, you and Dallin have talked about In the Pocket as a family, not just the band members, but the fans.
Community.
And Adrian was kind of in the center of that,
no question,
that fan community. And we all miss him.
Yeah.
And we all owe him a debt of gratitude. He was a huge supporter of our podcast. He would share the link and everything. So
Feel his loss in a big way, you know. I mean, his service that evening was really touching. I didn't know he wore it in a pocket shirt and had a cap, and I was just like, oh my God, you know, I mean, I had no idea. I mean, I knew that he loved what we were doing, but I was so touched by it, and he's greatly missed, and, you know, he had great friends, and his family's really remarkable, and it's a sad loss. It's been a rough couple weeks, you know, with loss, you know, and it's just a part of life sometimes. You have people that come into the picture that you don't count on, and you fall in love with them, and life has its, you know, life is life. And, you know.
Well, our condolences to his family and his many, many, many friends, both in the Philadelphia music community and beyond.
Right.
Adrian, we miss you, and you'll always be a part of, you know, what In the Pocket and everything we're doing here.
And Glenn,
Glenn. Well, we have good news. Yeah, Glenn Goss has been going through a scary procedure, and you said looks like things are going to be good, right?
Well, it's looking good. He had a heart valve put in yesterday. I spoke to him yesterday right before they rolled him in. I couldn't believe it, but this morning he was waiting up. He's in California, but he was waiting to call me this morning. I saw a photo of him on Facebook, his color. He looked great. Blew my mind, and amazing what they're doing these days. So it is, it's a remarkable thing. You know, we wish him all the best, and you know,
he's probably listening right now. So Glenn, if you're listening,
we love you, bro.
A quick recovery. Yeah. And of course, Glenn was a guest on the show, you know, a couple months ago, and a big fan. And I know I know Dave, as you said, you and him are like brothers from another mother.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
of course, he's got a history with the Hooters, co-writing Hanging on a Heartbeat.
Yeah.
So our best wishes to Glenn for a speedy recovery.
This was awesome.
This was great. Episode 40, and hopefully we'll not miss any weeks for the weeks ahead. So you catch us every week here on Wildfire Radio and Philly Rock Radio. Thanks to Taylor, doing a great job behind the booth as always. Thanks again to our sponsor, Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates. And we'll see you next week.
Next 41 next week.
On In the Pocket.
We hope. See you.